You will need to make sure. So, if the goal is definitely to be renting it out short term when you're not using it, before we actually go ahead and spend money on sending people over to view the property and the structural inspection and all the things that we'd normally do before we purchase, the first thing to do would be to pay a short-term stay research company to produce a report on how likely that particular listing is to comply with license requirements. It's never going to be a guarantee because it's always a case officer discretion kind of thing, but they'll produce a detailed report saying whether it's very likely, not certain because of ABC, or completely unlikely to get a license. They'll charge 22,000 yen for the first listing they research in every municipality. And then if you have others, which is probably going to be the case with you because you're only looking at Osaka, I'm assuming, then it's half that price, 11,000 for any subsequent properties in the same municipality. So if they come up with something that we can amend, like, oh, you need to adjust the common area to guest room ratio, that's something that we can do. But if it says, for example, you're not allowed to be within 500 meters to a school, depending on what the municipality stipulates, and it is, then there's nothing we can do to amend that. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right. So first off, just a quick reminder right before we get into today's episode. Pre-registration for early bird discounted tickets to the April 2026 Japan Real Estate Summit in Tokyo and online is now available. It'll be held at the glorious Pullman Hotel, this time near Tamachi Station, and streamed online, as always. So if you know you'll be attending, whether in person or via the Zoom streaming channel, you might want to pause this podcast for a moment. Hop over to the show notes or to our website, nippontradings.com. That's N-I-P-P-O-N, nippontradings with an S, all one word, .com. And pre-register now. There's no payment required at this stage, no commitment involved, but it will guarantee that you'll be notified when tickets go live and be able to purchase them at a large discount, so well worth taking a minute to do so. If you've been to or streamed any of the previous Japan Real Estate Summits, you already know what a phenomenal event it is, the largest and best English industry event in Japan, without a doubt, and the greatest community of like-minded Japan property enthusiasts like yourselves. Phenomenal learning, networking opportunity. So yeah, pause this for a moment, hop over to nippontradings.com and register for your early bird discounted tickets right now. All right, so for today's episode, we speak to an Australian couple. They're in the market for a central Osaka holiday home, which they also want to rent out short or medium term, so a bit of a hybrid, same kind of deal that many people are interested in these days. And so we talk generally about the nature of hybrids, which are not exactly investments and not really the ideal holiday home in most cases, about the advanced research that's required to confirm short-term stay license feasibility, which, as an added caveat, we've recorded this episode a while back, but that's now changed in Osaka. It used to be a designated short-term stay-friendly municipality, but it isn't anymore these days. It's like many other places in the country. So make sure you look into it carefully if you're after a similar arrangement or if you're investing in short-term stay properties there overall. We also talk about how property management works for these kinds of properties and the general hands-on nature of short-term stay real estate overall. We also talk briefly about condo units and in what scenarios might they be feasible for monthly or short-term rentals, the pros and cons of buying an older property and potentially renovating it up to spec. And then we branch off to a few other equally important topics like capital appreciation, taxation, financing, working with Japanese professionals, specifically realtors and property managers, purchase costs, insurance, and of course about our own services and how exactly we can assist them and other buyers and property owners like them. So a good detailed deep dive into all things related to hybrid holiday homes / short and medium stays. Enjoy the conversation and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, so I read through your email. The budget is good for central Osaka, that shouldn't be an issue, but the renting it out when you're not using it, and definitely to make it profitable rent out when you're not using it, that's going to be a bit of a challenge for a bunch of reasons. So first of all, Osaka City specifically is a, it's called Minpaku in Japan, short-term stays, is a short-term stay friendly municipality, so they're not as strict as some of the other, like Kyoto City, for example, is very, very difficult to get a license. Osaka is easier, but you will need to make sure. So if the goal is definitely to be renting it out short term when you're not using it, before we actually go ahead and spend money on sending people over to view the property and the structural inspection and all the things that we'd normally do before we purchase, the first thing to do would be to pay a short-term stay research company to produce a report on how likely that particular listing is to comply with license requirements. It's never going to be a guarantee because it's always a case officer discretion kind of thing, but they'll produce a detailed report saying whether it's very likely, not certain because of ABC, or completely unlikely to get a license. They'll charge 22,000 yen for the first listing they research in every municipality. And then if you have others, which is probably going to be the case with you because you're only looking at Osaka, I'm assuming, then it's half that price, 11,000 for any subsequent properties in the same municipality. So if they come up with something that we can amend, like, oh, you need to adjust the common area to guest room ratio, that's something that we can do. But if it says, for example, you're not allowed to be within 500 meters to a school, depending on what the municipality stipulates, and it is, then there's nothing we can do to amend that, right?
Yeah.
So if that's definitely a criteria, that the due diligence and research process is just going to look a little bit different and cost a few extra $100 just to confirm whether that particular listing is something that we want to pursue or not.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. And then we will need to enlist a short-term stay management company. And for them to take the property on, it has to be, A, in a good enough location to attract guests and in a good enough condition to attract guests, which I think, again, your budget should allow for, depending on how central, I mean, smack in the middle of Osaka might be a bit difficult with that, but hopefully not too suburban. The other thing is, if you're always going to be using the property in peak tourist season, it's not going to be worth their while to manage and rent it out for you. Right? So we need to make sure that they're not going to take it on if they don't feel it's going to be profitable enough for them.
We won't be coming over in all the peak season. We won't have an issue in that space.
Okay.
Yeah.
You also mentioned that 7 or 8 months leases are options, but that's not really a thing in Japan. Usually normal residential leases are for a 2-year period and automatically renewable at the end of that period.
Okay. Yeah. So with that, just your advice, I've watched a couple of other videos, but would it be more profitable to do it? I know you say it's a bit more work, but is Airbnb or shorter term stuff an easier way to do it like that rather than longer term?
Well, longer term means you can't use the property because you're going to be having somebody in there for at least 2 years at a time. Usually it's longer than that. So that kind of beats the point of you using the property, right?
Yeah.
So your options are...
I was thinking more like, you know, the short term, like a 6-month lease annually and then leaving it free for us or Airbnb the other 6 months. But are you saying that that's probably not
No, it's doable.
Practical?
It's not- It's not really a 6 month lease. The medium term between short term stay and long term residentials, the medium term is just a monthly rental. So we advertise the property for rent by the month. Some people will take it for a month or two. Some people will take it for 6. Some people will ask to take it for 12. So then it'll be up to you to decide whether, you're going to be postponing or skipping your trip this year. But the other thing with monthly is that a lot of the time, if they like the property and their work assignment gets longer, or they're visiting sick parents and the parents are still not quite well or still haven't passed away, whatever the case may be, so people will ask to extend, right? And then you could, it's a shame to throw out a good tenant, so you could let them extend and then use the money that you get from that to rent your own Airbnb when you, I mean, you'll have options. But again, if we keep limiting the property managers and telling them that no, we can't renew, we can't extend the lease, no, we can't accept this tenant, it's too long because we want to use the property, eventually they're not going to want to manage it anymore, right? So
So
the thing is
from
with
your,
holiday, just to
sorry.
finish this thought, sorry. So with holiday homes that you're planning to rent out when not in use, I wouldn't think of them as investments. They could hopefully cover costs, but I wouldn't expect much more beyond that because it'll always have to be scheduled and synchronized with whatever you want to do with the property, right?
Whereas, like, what Airbnb could be more of an investment, is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is if you're planning to use the property yourselves, and whichever way you're going to be renting it out is going to be subject to when you're going to be using the property, then you're not going to be purchasing the ideal Airbnb property. So you're obviously going to be purchasing something that, ticks your boxes and then try to rent it out when you know. It's just, if we're going for an investment property, we'll be looking at different types of property, maybe even different locations. We'd be catering to families or larger groups, which there's not much supply for in the market. It's not going to be what you are thinking, which is maybe a bit smaller, maybe a condo unit, maybe a two bedroom, whatever. We haven't dug into that yet, but it's going to be a hybrid. What I mean is it's going to be a hybrid. It's not going to be the ideal holiday home. It's not going to be the ideal investment property. It's going to be something that kind of tries to fit both.
I was going to say, like our number one, I mean, if we can make money from it, that's an ideal, but I guess it's more of a lifestyle property for us where we can go to Japan when we want and have a bit of a base there. But obviously it comes at a cost, so a bare minimum, it would be great to have a strategy that helps us at least get close to covering the costs. But, you know, a bonus if there's a bit of pocket money there, but it's not necessarily to try and, get a lot of gains from it, basically. So I guess if we were looking at that model of us coming and staying, once, twice a year, maybe, and it's between 2 to 3 families. And whether we come at the same time or different times, whatever. But in terms of like supply and demand in Osaka, like would you recommend us doing it more from the month-to-month lease strategy or more as an Airbnb strategy where people book in, the days that align in terms of like, getting a bit of funds back?
Well, Airbnb has a lot more compliance and licensing requirements. Monthly rentals are, you don't need anything special for that. Anyone can rent their property out by the month. As long as it's done with a lease in place for a period of at least 1 month, it falls under the normal rental legislation. So there's far less hoops to jump through. And also, short-term stays, I mean, they can be profitable if they're running like a really smooth, well-oiled machine, but they're a lot more hands-on. So you're constantly looking at vacancy rates, occupancy rates, how long have I got it booked last month? How long have I got it booked this month? What's the competition doing? Should I raise my rates, lower my rates? You'll have a property manager working on that with you, but you will require to be more hands-on decision-making wise, mental bandwidth wise. They're not a full-time job, but they're definitely not passive or even semi-passive. It's work. Monthly rentals, you get somebody in there for 2, 3, 4 months. You don't need to think about it for 2, 3, 4 months, right?
But is the dip like, I guess that's not a huge problem, but is the difference substantial? Because we've been to Japan quite a bit, and I would have been thinking that if we can get something towards central Osaka, that it would, the occupancy rate wouldn't be too bad if you did it like that, especially how popular Osaka is at the moment with even for a two-bedder or something like that, or a condo. if it, as long as it's in a good
Condo
area.
would be challenging. With condos, the owner union, they can't legally prohibit monthly rentals. Short-term stays are a no-no in condos because
Okay, yeah.
the law says that the owner union has to specifically allow it in the owner union rule book, and they will never do that. That's very, very rare. 99.9% of them don't want anything to do with that. Monthly rentals aren't, they can't legally prohibit, but if they don't like it, they can make life very difficult for the property manager. So again, they're not gonna, because they're not gonna allow them to hang a key box outside the building for people to use when they're checking in. They're gonna knock on the doors and saying, "Are you renting this out on Airbnb? You shouldn't be doing this." So
Yeah.
if the management company looks at the building owner union rule book and finds that it seems to be against monthly rentals, then again, they're not gonna take it on.
Yeah. So condos are harder in general than the two bedroom apartment unit, whatever you want to call it over there.
A house, you mean?
Oh, is that what we're discussing between house or condos here?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Oh,
So
okay, yeah, cool.
renting out short or medium, short or monthly term in a condo is more, short term is a no-no. Monthly, we'd have to look for the right building. It's not going to be a straightforward, simple process. Hopefully, we'll find one eventually that's okay with it, but it's not going to be easy with the house. If you own the entire structure, all we care about is zoning regulations and if the municipality allows it or not. With a condo unit, we have to think about what the owner union allows and likes or doesn't like, so it's going to be more challenging.
Is it easier? Is it harder to get a house though in like central Osaka? Or
Well, at your budget in central Osaka, it's not going to be anything close to a new house. It's going to be, I'm assuming, at least 30 years and older. And they're not really built to last in Japan. It's not very durable
yeah.
materials normally. So once they get past 30, 35 years of age, you're constantly going to be starting to pump money into them for renovations, repairs. On average, I'd say 30 to 40, maybe 2, 3,000 Aussie a year. As it
Yeah.
gets from 40 to 50, maybe more like 3, 4 Aussie a year. So if you want to go short-term stays, that's the only way to go. But if you're just looking for a holiday home and you're not super concerned about renting it out, I'd say a condo is far less of a hassle.
Yeah.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in Webdisk Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top of the list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
I was just going to say, finish off what you've got to say because I've got a different question that's related but different.
I was just going to say, but condos, didn't you just say then condos, they won't do short-term stays or Airbnb? You're not allowed to do that?
Short-term stays Airbnb you're not going to do.
Yeah.
We might be able to do monthly rentals if we find a condo that's not particularly opposed to it, but that'll take some searching.
Yeah. Okay.
I was just going to say, Ziv, so you're saying with our budget, we wouldn't be able to get a newer house in central Osaka. So what budget would it take to either get, a newer or newly renovated property within or near central Osaka?
And
What budget are we looking for?
newly renovated, you might be able to find. But the question is, what kind of renovations they did? If it's usually the renovated houses that are, not crazy expensive, would just have gone through an interior renovation. What we're more concerned about is structural issues.
Structural.
Yeah. So tilting, sinking, if the roof needs to be replaced, if there's signs of termite past or present termite infestations. Those are all things that can cost a fair bit to replace or repair. Like if you have to do the complete roof, it's going to be 4 or 5 million yen. If you have to fix the foundation, and if there's a retaining wall that needs to be adjusted and the earth around the house repacked, that could come to half the price of the property again or more, right? So the structural inspection that we're going to do, if it's a house older than 20, we definitely advise to do it. That would cost you between $1,000 to $2,000, and that would tell you if there are any major structural issues. And then based on that, you can pull back the offer or continue with it if none.
How much would we have to increase the budget to go to something a bit newer with the structure around the soccer?
If we want to go for 20 years and younger, which is what we'd probably advise if you can afford it, I'd say probably more like 30 million yen ish.
That's what I was thinking that for
Yeah.
that for newer stuff anyway.
I think we're in the position where we'd rather pay more at the front end and not have, especially be international, especially being international buyers, and not having to have, worry about too much around maintenance. Obviously, there's always going to be a level of maintenance when you own property, but I think we're happy to invest a bit more up front to,
Well, I
prevent
mean, the other option
money at the
is to not worry about renting it out and just get a condo unit, and then you know that you're paying your building fees, which are going to be, I don't know, $2,000 a year or whatever it is, but it's going to be steady. It's not going to fluctuate that much like with a house. And you don't need to worry about the structure because the building management company and the owner union take care of that.
But then there's zero income at all coming in for that
Zero
property,
income.
yeah.
I mean, we can try to aim for one that allows monthly rentals if you want. We can try to maybe start exploring that, and if we hit a wall, then we'll go the house route again if you want.
So when you're saying about the building, so you're saying more like on strata, buying a property on strata? Okay. So then it's not like it's up to the building
So you're
owners to
paying your
worry about that.
monthly, you're paying two fees monthly. One is the bodycorp fees are basically, one of them is the management of the building. So taking care of the common areas, cleaning, bit of gardening if there's bushes outside, maybe an on-site manager depending on the building. And utilities for common areas, so water and electricity for the lobby, that kind of thing. And the other one is the reserve fund contributions, which goes to a big pool of money that the owner union then uses for renovations and repairs when those are required. So
Yeah, I've got an investment property here actually that's under the same kind of thing. So,
Except that,
yeah.
I mean, body corps in Japan are not like in Australia or even worse in the US, where they constantly got their hand in your pocket. They're very mellow here. They just charge what they need to charge and they leave you alone. Yeah. So building fees will go up steadily over time, but if we do our due diligence right, which on the building means to check the renovation history and correlate it with how much they got in reserve funds, just to make sure they've got enough for the next big renovation whenever that comes up. If we make sure that that's all, healthy and well managed, then the building fees will rise slowly over time, as opposed to like sudden hikes or suddenly the owner union has to take out a loan, so they jack up the fees for the loan repayments. So we want to avoid those situations. But if it's well managed and a healthy reserve fund or a healthy renovation history or both, then we know that whatever you're paying now will probably be safe to assume that it'll be a similar price for the next few years to come.
And when you're looking for a property in Japan, so like in Australia, whether I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but basically, if you're looking for an investment, you'll purchase somewhere where, it's anticipated that there's going to be a high capital growth or something like that. Whereas from what I'm hearing and seeing
We
in
don't
Japan,
bank on that,
it's
no.
nothing like that. Yeah, exactly. So it's
I
more
mean,
about.
I try not to recommend it as a strategy. The last 15 years have been good for capital growth in big cities, especially Tokyo, Osaka, Fukuoka. And Kyoto always rises kind of steadily, but that's on the back of 25 years of deflation, and the population is shrinking, and the GDP debt to GDP ratio is still quite high. So there are a lot of headwinds still facing the economy here. So I'm hesitating to say whether that's a given that it'll continue to go up.
Yeah, like with capital growth, like we've said, we understand it's probably not going to be no capital growth in Japan. That's not what we're doing it for. But rental yield, sorry, but cash flow was a little bit of a different thing. So for me, where I see it, I'm not sure you, Kirsty, but if we're going to spend 30 million yen, which I think we should probably lean towards getting a newer dwelling, and that's probably the better. We need to find a way to get some cash flow in for it as well, and not just have it sitting there. For this to work for us, because we're still gonna have to outlay that money, so we're gonna have to get some cash in from somewhere. Especially, they'll be able to
Otherwise,
raise
we're
the
better
number.
off just paying for a good, short-term stay ourselves somewhere where we want to be.
100%.
Well, that's one of the calculations. How much are you spending on accommodation every year when you guys come over?
I've actually that's the thing. I've actually used Airbnb and used condos in Osaka a couple of times in central Osaka,
Yeah, that's
so.
right. If you own the entire building, you can do whatever you want. But if it's a strata situation where different owners and there's an owner union, then it's not going to be op an option.
Okay.
The case by case basis, by the sounds of it,
Yeah.
which is why you get those checks done.
Yep.
So this was a big building, and there's all different rooms. So that the one person would have had to own the whole building. Is that what you're saying those times?
Either that, or it's one of the very, very, very rare cases where the owner, like if everyone's an investor who owns the units and they don't mind, then they
Yeah,
might
yeah,
keep.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah. I'll
but
get
that's
it.
extremely rare. I'd say less than 1% of buildings would be like that.
Okay.
Or they're being dodgy, one of the two, not
But
following
they
the.
can't list on Airbnb if they're
Yeah,
dodgy.
exactly.
Not
That's what
since,
I was thinking. Oh, okay. They've got
yeah,
those checks and
that's been
balances.
blocked since 2018 when the new legislation came in.
Yeah. No, that's
So
okay.
which,
So, yeah. Go, Kirsty.
I'll go. So, which, from your experience, Liv, which suburbs or wards of Osaka would be best for us to start looking in terms of location?
Anywhere between Umeda and Namba Station, the two main train stations, one to the north, one to the south.
Yeah, we'll probably like. I probably look. I'm not fast, but as long as we get a good something that you think's a good deal for us to do. But from my stays, I prefer the Namba side than the Umeda side, personally. Like all through that, like Namba, Shinshibashi, Nippon-bashi, and all through there.
Yeah, that's there. Or closer
Yeah,
to Shin-Osaka Station, where the bullet train stops. That's also a good spot.
that's a little bit further out, though, isn't it?
It is, but there's a lot of people commuting via bullet train to Osaka.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
It would just, I guess, depend on what's available. Like, if there's something available within our range that's a bit closer to Namba, then obviously we'd probably prefer that. If it's something that we need to go out a little bit, just that little bit further, but with good transportation,
Yep.
then we'd obviously look at that. But for 30 million, do you think we'd be in the market around somewhere a little bit closer to Namba?
I would assume so. Yeah, that's just a
Yeah.
question of how young the building will be. So let's see if we can find something 20 years and younger, or at least 25, 30 years and younger.
Yeah.
We'll see how we go. Let me just ask, there's one agent that we work with that handles monthly rentals. I'll just ask them if they can also do Minpaku short-term stays. If they can, that they would be the probably the best realtor to rope into that, because they'll be able to look at a listing and also immediately assess how profitable it might be for short-term stays.
No worries. So just to clarify, if we were going to spend that amount, that rough budget,
Yep.
how what are the options to be able to get cash flow? So the cash flow is just purely a house from there, yeah? It wouldn't be anything to do with an
A
apartment or anything like
house or one of those condo units that would be okay with monthly rentals. We can look for one
that.
or the other.
I guess you only need to hit one, don't you?
Yeah, you'll probably get a more central location if we go the condo unit path, because houses come with a land plot, and that's the expensive part in Japan.
That's what I was. So that's why I asked that question, because being around Osaka a fair bit, I just couldn't get see in my head how we're going to get a house in central Osaka around that. For me, it was all just apartments and stuff like that. But
It'll have to be older and, not smack right next to the station, but they do exist.
yeah,
Yeah.
it's okay.
I know you're not a financial expert, and we can ask our own accountants this, but if we were to just from your experience, if we were to rent it out, Airbnb or short stay, do you kind of have a bit of an idea around income tax or how that works kind of from a Japanese perspective, or
Yep.
we'd be
So
paying?
you're paying your income tax on your income generated in Japan first, and then you bring your tax statement to Australia, and they will charge you for the difference. So Australia and Japan have a tax treaty in place. You're not going to be taxed twice. But if you're paying 5% here and 20, 30, 40% in Australia, then Australia will want the difference between what you've paid here and what you're still owing.
Okay.
And here you're. The reporting threshold starts at, I think from memory, 4,000, 485,000 yen, which is about 5,000 Australian per year. Under that, you don't need to report anything, and you factor in all of your purchase and running and management costs as deductions. So it'll normally, if you do get to that level, it'll probably take you at least 2, 3, 4 years before you'll be up for any taxes. And even then, it'll be pretty low. It'll be something like 5% on every yen thereafter. So if you're making 6,000 bucks, it'll be 5% of 2,000.
Yeah, what's the $400,000 figure? Sorry.
Five, that's the minimum reporting threshold. You're tax-free under that.
My reporting for in what aspect?
In terms of getting income through the property?
Oh, per year?
As long as
Okay.
you're making under that amount per year, you
Yeah.
don't need to report or pay
You
taxes in
don't.
Japan.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know if we'd need to report or pay taxes in Australia, or it's the same?
You're supposed to, yeah. I mean, there is some threshold in Australia, but if you're all working, you're probably all well over that.
Okay, so even though they've got a treaty in place, even though the under 485,000 yen is tax free in Japan, where
But
there
not in
would be a
Australia.
responsibility in Australia. Okay.
Yes, the treaty just means that you don't get taxed twice on the same amount.
Okay, which is important.
Yes, you definitely will. I mean, if any country that doesn't have a tax treaty with Japan is probably not a country where people report their taxes that much anyway, I think.
Yeah.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
So in terms of your company, so I know that just from listening to the podcast, you can either act as a consultant or kind of work with potential buyers, international buyers, start to end. Do you still have capacity to do the start to end, or because I
Not before the end of the year. I'm hoping maybe earlier. We've just finally found a bilingual bookkeeper that's starting next week, but we have had two or three of them that just couldn't handle the English and quit after a while. So I'm a bit hesitant to say whether this one will last or not. But
Yeah.
if he stays with us, then towards the end of the year, we should be able to do full purchase facilitation.
Yeah. So what does that include, Ziv?
Well, that means that you just need to talk to us. We'll attend all of the meetings on your behalf, sign documents on your behalf. We'll talk to the lawyer, we'll talk to the agent, we'll talk to the property managers, and you just need to talk to us directly and make bottom line decisions and sign a couple of documents for ownership transfer towards the end. And that's also a fixed fee. Will work as long as we need to work. I mean, we have a limit on how many properties we look into. It's 20 at the inquiry stage and 10 for a deep dive. But we haven't run across anyone that hasn't sufficed for yet. But that we're not able to do now. So what we can do, if you want to pull the trigger before then, is I'll put you directly in touch with a foreigner-friendly English-speaking agent, so they'll be able to do the logistics of the purchase remotely in English on your behalf, same as we would have done. They would be realtors, though, so they're honest and by the book in Japan, but they're not super strategic. Their job is to get a listing or research a listing for you and then make sure that you can purchase it legally. The kind of conversation that we just had about watch out for the age, watch out for location, this one might not be that good, help you prioritize, they're not going to do much of that. So we can come in as consultants on a 10-hour retainer, which is just a few hundred bucks, and hold your hand as you proceed with the purchase. We'll guide the agent on what due diligence we want done. If it's a house, we'll review the inspection report together with you, make recommendations, review documents before you sign. Just make sure you're not making any costly mistakes along the way, kind of thing.
Yeah,
But
so I reckon for me with that, if your employee can get up to speed by end of the year, then we'd probably take that route, because we're not in a super rush to get something like in the next 2 weeks, and it probably will take us a little bit of time to get everything in order, and just do some research and wait for the right property anyway. But yeah, if something did pop up, then obviously open to the second option.
I mean, if you happen to land
Yeah.
on a listing that you really don't want to miss out in, then we can always kick it
Yeah.
off with the consulting whenever you're ready.
Yeah, exactly. If there was something
And
that
what's
you think's
the.
too good to refuse, then yeah, that would be an option as well. I don't see either way as an issue.
Just curious, Ziv, around the fixed fee versus the consultant fee for 10 hours.
A few thousand bucks for the full purchase facilitation. It's and your price level, it's probably going to be 4%.
Are we talking AD, like Australian dollars, or?
Percent of the purchase price.
Oh,
So,
sorry, you said 300, you said 3,000.
about 12,000 for
a
a
few, no,
$300 property.
a few thousand, I was saying. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Okay, got you.
So if we happen to end up buying something that's 30 million and over, it goes down to 3%.
Yeah.
But between 15 to 30, which is probably where we're going to end up, is going to be 4%.
So yeah, so 3% around will be a bit around that 12, 10 to 12,000 Australian dollars, correct?
If it's the close to 30 million, yeah.
Yeah, I've already worked all that out, so that's all good. That's not a surprise.
And the consulting is a 10-hour retainer that usually suffices for a single purchase unless you're super picky. I only have ever had one customer who needed two retainers of that size, and that's 66,000 yen, so about 700 Australian.
What was that for, sorry?
The consulting, that's me
Oh,
holding your hand as you work with the
yeah.
agent and the lawyer on your own. Well, not on your own. I'll be there in the chat group with you and
Yeah.
make recommendation, provide feedback, but you'll be the one attending meetings, signing documents, making sure that everything gets there on time. You'll have to be more hands-on.
Yeah. And then you save cash from doing it that way.
Yep.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, obviously being international buyers, we don't have the cash to, just buy outright, obviously. So what do Australian or international buyers do in terms of getting the funds for that? Is there kind of like a
No,
bank? Do we have to get the
not for holiday homes or short-term rentals or anything like that. You can't get any financing in Japan.
Yeah, there's an
So,
international agent though, isn't there? International
international what? Sorry.
financing, like an international bank.
There are some lenders that will let you if you set up a corporate entity in Japan, and you might have to appoint a Japanese resident as your CEO, as your representative director. Then there are some lenders that would let you borrow, but that's only for long-term residential, strictly investment properties, not Airbnb, not holiday home, nothing of that sort.
Okay,
Not an
Holiday,
option.
what we're
With
trying
your
to do, you're
game
going to pay
plan, that's
cash.
not an option, unfortunately.
So the only option is cash with our game plan.
Yes.
Yeah.
That I'm aware of. There could be some Australian lenders who might consider that, but I haven't run across any of those yet.
Okay.
So Jay's lenders or cash, basically. Australian lenders or cash.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the Japanese lenders.
Not unless you're buying a straight out investment property with, I mean, you could claim that you're going to make it an investment property and then do other things with it, but if they find out, they will be within the rights to reclaim the loan.
Yeah. Just wondering how that works, because in Australia we can we can loan for a house, and we're open, we're free to do Airbnb or anything we like over here with our lending and stuff. I thought
Not
I was
really.
reading. I thought I was reading. There's a bank called HSBC do it. It is an international bank, so I might have to look into that.
HSBC, I think, do provide loans, but again, strictly for investment property. If you're a Japanese resident, then they'll let you borrow for a home loan as well.
Yeah.
But for non-residents, the only options that I'm aware of are for residential long-term, doesn't have to be residential or commercial, but long-term leases, not for
Yeah.
short-term, monthly, nothing like that.
Oh, 'cause they're worried about the not getting the income.
Yeah, they're just really conservative here. They're not interested in, and you being a non-resident is a higher risk factor for them. So the only way they'll take it on if it's something that they can handle. Central Osaka would be good for them, but they'd want long-term residential leases,
Yeah.
at least on the surface. Again, I guess you could try to do other things with it and hope they don't find out. But if they do, they could ask you to repay the loan,
Yeah.
which might mean you might have to sell the property if you don't have the cash.
Yeah.
In terms of upfront costs, so obviously the cost of the home is the cost of the home, but what other purchasing property costs are we kind of looking at in Japan?
Purchase costs at this budget would be roughly, worst case, 15%, hopefully closer to 10%. The realtor fee is 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax, works out to be somewhere between 3 to 4% at this budget. Legal and registration fees would be somewhere between 2 to 4, 4.5%. You get a purchase tax statement that comes in 6 to 12 months after settlement. That's going to be between 1.5 to 2.5%. So we normally factor in a worst case of 15 for cheaper properties and then closer to 10 for pricier properties. You'd probably be closer to 10.
Yep.
And is that inclusive of stamp duty?
Yeah, stamp duty is peanuts in Japan. It's not much.
Okay.
Like $100 on a purchase usually.
Okay.
But the legal and registration fees include what the government charges to register the ownership transfer and the lawyer's fee for handling it all on your behalf. I mean, they vary depending on the official evaluation of the property, which is always going to be a little bit different to market price, sometimes all the way up to double or half the market price, depending on how much an area has gone up or down in value since the government last ran their assessment. So it's hard to quantify in advance. I can tell you that legal and registration would be somewhere between 1 to 6%, purchase tax somewhere between 1 to 3%, but the exact percentages we're only going to know closer to settlement. So
What's
just but keep
yeah.
in mind a worst case scenario of 15%.
Sorry, I just want to wind back a bit. What's this Japanese entity involved? Because we do know a few people in Japan. If it was better to do it that way,
But it sounds like that's only if
Long-term leases.
long-term leases
Is that
only, not
long-term
for our
leases?
purpose.
Okay, cool. Let's move
So
on
for a
then.
Japanese lender to lend to a non-resident like yourselves, they would want you to set up a local Japanese corporate structure, a
Yeah.
company. Yeah. And then the company can borrow. But companies come with their own upkeep fees, right? There's
Yeah.
$2,000 to $3,000 a year in minimum corporate tax and accounting and bookkeeping. So you have to make sure that your plan covers that. And I don't think it does from the sound of it. That's
Yeah,
going to
that's all. We won't worry about that one. That's all right. I'll just ask another question.
And in terms of ongoing costs, and insurances and stuff like that, what would that look like as a international buyer?
Insurance would be about 3-4,000 bucks for a 5-year policy. So let's call it worst case about $1,000 a year. And if it's a house, if it's a condo unit, it's going to be cheaper, a few hundred dollars, maybe up to 1,000 a year, probably less.
And what would that cover? Is that like natural
Disaster. They
disasters?
call it officially fire insurance, but it also covers earthquakes, typhoon damages, fires, theft. Everything is covered. Earthquakes are covered at half of the coverage. So if it's a house, for example, then your payout will be sufficient to let you build a new house if it's the case of total loss, which they classify as 50% of the value in cost of repairs and above. So if it's anything but an earthquake, you'll get the full amount needed to build a brand new house. And if it's an earthquake, you'll get half of that amount.
And what about kind of damage and like contents and stuff like that, if it was to be broken into and things stolen, does that cover that
There'll
type of
be
insurance?
options. So we'll provide you with a few estimates. Then one of them will include with belongings, one of them will be without. The difference between them would be quite small for the 5-year policy. So I'd always advise to get the max coverage you can.
And in Australia, we pay council rates. Is there something equivalent in Japan?
Property taxes, yeah, once a year.
Property taxes.
One more question relating to the bank stuff.
Yeah.
So in over here, what happens is, if we get an investment property or anything, what it is, purchasing a property, they'll calculate numbers of what the potential income is from long-term stay as well. Exactly what you're saying, just to make sure that what you're getting in covers your loan. But then what we can do is we can do whatever we want with that property. We can Airbnb it or we can do whatever, as long as when that monthly amount comes in, we still are covering what the mortgage cost is. So is that, I'm thinking that with an international agent, that potentially could be similar as well. They'll do all the working out and all the costing on long-term leases. And then as long as they say that, a long-term lease, you'll be able to afford that property, and it's within the range, as long as
Well, I think we lost him.
hopefully his phone hasn't. Maybe his phone's gone flat or something.
Yeah.
We'll give him a
Anyway,
chance to
to
come
answer his question in case he doesn't pop back in,
back.
no, it's a condition of the loan that it's only going to be used for long-term leases. It's not just it's not just for financial projections. It's an actual condition of the loan.
Cool. And when we're talking about end to end, that option of more comprehensive support from your company. So obviously it's about sourcing and purchasing that property. What about once it gets to that point, and then, if we were to lease it out as an Airbnb or short, monthly stay or whatever, would that be more property management that we go to, fitting it out with furniture, that kind of stuff?
So it'll be up to you. The property managers that you'll be working with, because it's going to be short-term stay and probably a lot of the monthly ones too, they will be catering to obviously foreign guests. So they would have the English language capability to support you directly as a landlord as well in most cases. So some of our customers work with them directly, and then if they have any trouble, then they loop us back in and we'll try to find another property manager. Or you could, from the get-go, have us manage the managers on your behalf, kind of thing. So that's totally up to you. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you who have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily, ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties. AkiyaMart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off AkiyaMart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today. No, it's a condition of the loan that you only use the property for long-term residential or commercial leases, but long-term.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If they do find out, they might call, probably will reclaim the loan on you. It's not just for projections. It's an actual condition.
Okay. So if we're going to go that way, we're better off looking through Australia.
If you can find somebody, yeah. That'll be interesting for a lot of my customers, so let me know.
Yeah. All good. Any other?
So I guess maybe in terms of time frame. So if we're not in a hurry to buy right now, and our preference is to have the end-to-end support potentially of your company, is there anything you suggest that we do in the meantime to kind of, obviously looking at financing is going to be an important one, but is there anything else you would suggest that we can be doing in the background to prepare us for when we do get to that point with your company?
Are you actively looking at listings at the moment?
Not as much as if we were really gearing up to buy something. We were aware of some of the websites that are available. We weren't sure whether or not your company has like off-market access to certain properties that might be useful
to look
at.
There's not much off-market stuff going on in Japan. Everything makes it to the to the MLS websites eventually. It's a pretty open market. We occasionally get something directly from an agent before they post it on the portals, but that's a very low percentage. I would maybe, do you know AkiyaMart? That's probably the easiest way to search in English that I know.
Yeah, we've got that one.
I've been looking at those ones. That's what I was going to see, if there's anything else other than those top. So is AkiyaMart the only one?
It's not the only one, but it's the best one in English, because they scrape all of the major property websites, the four or five big portals, and put it in an English format and map interface and filtering for you.
Okay, cool.
Otherwise, you go to those portals that they're scraping, but then you have to translate it from Japanese, and the interface isn't nearly as exciting.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those ones too. It's pretty hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all right.
So apart from looking at that website, anything else and that you suggest we could be doing?
Now, once we start working together, whether it's via consulting or full on, then we'll also be putting in some research on your behalf. I mean, you're obviously the best filter, because you can look at photos and a map location and know if it ticks your boxes or not, but we can definitely support you in that. If it's an agent, then we'll just ask the agent to research for us, and then they'll float listings to us. If it's going to be an agent that also does short-term stay or monthly management, then that'll be the best of both worlds, because they'll research listings that they know will work for that, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I wouldn't put them out of the way until we're, let's say, 2 months before you can actually pull the trigger. So otherwise, if we just keep hitting them with research requests and then we say, okay, well, now we have to wait a few months because we're not ready, then eventually they're just going to figure
we're
just tire kickers, right? So,
yep.
Probably too much.
It sounds like our biggest hurdle was the finance, but if we can find a way to do that, then I think we're really interested in getting something to happen. We've got everything else in line, so
yep.
I mean, there's other ways to generate the cash. We've all got investment properties and that, but it might not be feasible to do it that way. So we were hoping to be able to get some type of finance with it. So we might just do a little bit of research on that.
Yep.
And as long as we can find a place like that, I think we can go to the next stage.
Yep. And again, if you keep looking on AkiyaMart or whatever, and you happen to find a listing that you really don't want to miss out on, the consulting way works fine. I've been doing it for over a year, and people are quite happy with it. So don't feel obliged to wait to the end of the year or what.
More than comfortable.
Would that mean then, Zib, that we would need to do all the paperwork ourselves and, like,
Yeah, but
What would we?
it'll be in English, and the agent will guide you on all of that. It's not gonna be difficult. It's just gonna be more involved. That's the only difference.
Okay. Because I guess it's not our first, either of us first rodeo in purchasing properties. It's the first time we've purchased properties internationally. I think that's the challenge, and about, the language barrier and things like that. So I guess if we did see something that really took our fancy, we could, go
No,
through the
any
process.
agent, it's not going to be a random Japanese agent that may or may not be able to serve you. I'll put you in touch with somebody that we work with regularly. We've vetted, they're bilingual, they provide documentation in English. That's all going to be covered. That's not a concern.
Yeah.
All right.
All
Well,
right, cool.
we'll have a think about it anyway, and maybe we'll keep in touch. And once your books free up a little bit more to be able to kind of potentially take on that broader role, you'll let us know.
I will try to remember, but there's a lot of people who have asked me to let them know. So if you could ping me around August, I'd be well and truly able to tell you when that's going to happen.
Yeah, easy done.
All right, great. Is
Right,
there
but yeah,
something that
if you hear about financing before that, please do get in touch before that as well and let me know, because I'd be very interested in that.
Thank you. Is there something on your website, or your fact sheets or whatever that kind of lay out the difference in services provided via consultant versus the end-to-end?
The explanation of services document that I think Faye forwarded to you, that's the only
Yep,
thing
okay.
we've got that written down. We only are doing the consulting route in the last year or so, since we were starting to get too slammed and too busy, and so we haven't like put it officially anywhere now.
Yep. What are the most of the sales that you're helping people with properties, like from your own portfolio? So are people mostly kind of wanting a Saka or for personal use or as an investment? Like, what are you seeing come through your company?
These days, 50-50 holiday homes and straight out investment properties where people don't ever use it. Location wise, the investment properties are usually focused around the big cities or satellite communities around the big cities, like a smaller town where people commute up to an hour into Osaka or Tokyo or whatever. Also, prefectural capitals, like the biggest city in an otherwise rural area. Those are good places to hit for higher yield as well. Holiday homes run the gamut, because some people are in love with ski, they go up to Hokkaido. Some people want a condo in Tokyo. Some people want to be next to the onsens or next to the beach. So that's all over Japan. I can't really put a criteria on that. But we have a lot of people who are looking at bottom of the barrel kind of Akiya stuff, and then we try to educate them that it might end up costing them a lot more than buying something in better condition. So the sweet spot for something that's serviceable and not too old, depending on location, is somewhere between 8 to 20 million yen. So you're definitely in the right ballpark. And a lot of
Great.
people, yeah, trying to do hybrids like yourselves, various levels of success, but most of them, again, are in it just to cover costs, not much beyond that. So that's doable. It's just a matter of how much of a hassle it's going to be.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that most of your stuff would come from Osaka or Tokyo because Kyoto's much harder, near impossible to purchase in.
Or some of the rural areas as well. There are, a bunch of like Miyoko, what's the other one? Izu Peninsula. I forget the name. Nani Nani Onsen. I don't know. There are a lot of places that are suddenly becoming a bit more popular. Usually Australians make it first, and then everybody from the US and Canada come in as well, or in Europe. So the couple of spots where Australians have picked up, especially next to ski resorts, that are quite popular, and then people are trying to get a house there to rent out when they're not using as well. So it's not only in the cities, but it has to be a, if it is a rural area, it has to be something that's popular with tourists. You can't just buy it smack in the middle of nowhere and convince the world to come and stay there, yeah?
Besides the interpersonal potential risks that would come with, purchasing with multiple buyers, is there anything else, like from an international or Japanese property market perspective, we need to think about if we're kind of got a couple of 2 to 3 families going in to purchase a property?
No, we can split the title deed any way you want.
Okay.
Just tell us what percentage of ownership for each buyer, and that'll be fine. I'm sorry, I gotta jump off to another call. So I
No
will let
problem.
you get back to me on the financing, and if you happen to find any listing that you don't want to miss out on. And otherwise, yeah, if you could ping me around August, I'll be able to tell you when we're ready for full onboarding.
No worries.
Perfect.
All right, thanks
All
for
right,
your time,
thanks so
mate.
much. Thanks
Yeah,
so
thanks for
much.
your
All right.
time. Talk to you
Thank you
soon.
very much. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
So there you have it. A nice thorough review of the hybrid holiday home slash rental real estate property model here in Japan. I feel like we've covered a lot of the issues that are related to this particular style of purchase, as well as some more general bird's eye view related topics. But if there was anything that we haven't touched on and you'd like to hear more about, please do let us know. We're more than happy to circle back to these topics at any point in time. You can send us your written or, if you'd like to be featured on the podcast, audio or video recorded questions, and we'll make sure all of them are answered to the best of our ability. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.